TUC Radio, San Francisco. Time of Useful Consciousness. 911 Unanswered Questions. Failure to intercept.
United 93, Cleveland.
United 93, Cleveland Center, I don't, please. United 93, Cleveland.
Air traffic control. Trying to contact Flight 93 on September 11. Flight 93 was the last of four planes hijacked on that day. The plane later crashed in Pennsylvania. Why was there a failure to intercept any of the hijacked planes on September 11 as they flew towards their targets? According to Federal Aviation Administration rules, military interceptors must be sent up immediately to any plane that deviates from its course or loses radio and radar contact. Here is the Canadian journalist Barry Zwicker on the failure to intercept.
A common explanation as to why no U.S. military interceptors took to the skies on September 11th until it was too late is that it was simple incompetence. Well, let me deal with the incompetence theory. First, by taking you back to October 26, 1999. That is the day the chartered Learjet carrying golfer Payne Stewart crashes, killing all on board. This from the National Transportation Safety Board crash report. 9:19 a.m., the flight departs. 9:24, the Learjet's pilot responds to an instruction from air traffic control. 9:33, the controller radios another instruction. No response from the pilot. For 4.5 minutes, the controller tries to establish contact. Having failed, the controller calls in the military. Note that he did not seek, nor did he require, the approval of the President of the United States, or indeed anyone. It's standard procedure, followed routinely, to call in the Air Force when radio contact with a commercial passenger jet is lost, or the plane departs from its flight path. 9:54, 16 minutes later, the F-16 reaches the Learjet at 46,000 feet and conducts a visual inspection. Total elapsed time, 21 minutes. So, what does this prove? Well, it proves that standing routines exist for dealing with all such emergencies. For large scheduled aircraft, tracked throughout on radar, to depart extravagantly from their flight paths would trigger numerous calls to the military, especially after two have hit the World Trade Center and now one is speeding toward Washington, D.C.
Barry Zwicker raised these questions in his film, The Great Deception, just 4 months after 9-1-1. His questions have not yet been answered. If it was incompetence, why have the persons responsible for the tragic, massive failure not been found or named over 2 years later? If it was not incompetence, where is the explanation for the failure to intercept? At the San Francisco International Inquiry into 911 in March of 2004, the former Los Angeles police officer Michael Rupert presented his detective work entitled What Did Not Happen on 911? Mike Rupert is the publisher of the newsletter entitled From the Wilderness. Here is Michael Rupert.
Hi, everybody. Something that is so intense, but it doesn't need to be overcomplicated. And what I'm going to do for you tonight is to make the exact same presentation I would make if I were a detective presenting a case for prosecution on strictly the issue of the FAA and NORAD response on September the 11th. Here's the law. Consider that an aircraft, this is from the FAA operations manual, consider that an aircraft emergency exists when there is an unexpected loss of radar contact and radio communications with any aircraft. Elsewhere, the FAA states emergency determinations under a section called emergency determinations. If you are in doubt that a situation constitutes an emergency or potential emergency, handle it as though it were an emergency. No equivocation in language there. Aircraft goes off course. They don't answer the radio. They deviate in any way, shape, or form. If these conditions exist, you can't get a response. This says clearly you shall treat it as an emergency. Indeed, listen to this. The U.S. military has their own radar network, NORAD. They are tied to the FAA computer in order to get information on incoming flights. If a target is discovered without a flight plan or information, or in violation of the same, they will call on the shout line to the appropriate ATC, Air Traffic Control Center, for an ID. If the center sector has no data block or other information on it, the military will usually scramble and intercept flight, and they will likely find two F-18s on their tail within 10 or so minutes. Close quote. In the year prior to 9/11, U.S. Air Force and Air National Guard fighter jets were scrambled 67 times on a routine basis under these circumstances and were flying beside the designated target within a matter of minutes, usually less than a half an hour, but the scramble order was issued immediately according to the book. Now, let's look at this thing I call pulling the trigger. This is from a 1998 FAA Executive Order number 760.4J, effective November 3, 1998. It's on the website. That's the website listing. According to FAA regulations, it is the FAA hijack coordinator who issues all requests for the military to provide interceptions and escorts. And the hijack coordinator will do so, quote, by direct contact with the National Military Command Center. That's in the Pentagon. What we see here is that at NORAD headquarters, which are in Colorado, there's only one guy who sits on the trigger for all of the hijacked airliners on 9/11. His instructions are brutally clear. There is no leeway for his choice in the matter as to what his options are when certain conditions exist. And here's another quote that from the Associated Press on August 13th. Fighter jets scrambled 67 times properly in the calendar year prior to 9/11. Now, this is a chart that I will be publishing in my book, and which is fully footnoted, which gives you the source from where I got the information. And we're going to go through this timeline now, exactly as I would do if I was in court, because it's according to this timeline that I can ask questions of witnesses under direct examination. If this happened at this time, what did you do then? And if you did not follow the procedure, why did you not follow the procedure? It is a cut-and-dried case of direct examination, or if I were a detective, what I would say to a suspect or possible suspect or person of interest in the case. We're going to go through this. The morning of September the 11th, 8:13. Last routine contact with Flight 11. Immediately thereafter, the pilot fails to respond to a call to climb to a new altitude. Flight 11 took off at 7:59. Source for that, Boston Globe. 8:13, Flight 11 hijacked. Source for that, item number two. That comes from the Nashua Telegraph. It's also on the NORAD timeline. 8:14, pilot, Flight 11 activates talkback button. Controller can hear conversation in the cockpit. Every commercial airliner has a series of three buttons on the control yoke, which are called the IFF, Identify Friend or Foe buttons. One is in-flight emergency, one is hijack, and there's another one for some other emergency. The hijack button was activated on the control yoke. Christian Science Monitor, there's a real fine conspiracy theory paper, September 13, 2003. So we know from these events right now that at this point that between 8:13 and 8:14 a.m. in the morning, we have confirmation, according to what the FAA would know, that Flight 11 had been hijacked, period. There is no question. At that point, immediately, the scramble order should have been issued. Now we're going to look at some delays. 8:20, Flight 11 veers dramatically off course, a.m. FAA absolutely should have been notified. We have now two or more conditions existing. 8:20, Boston Air Traffic Control decides that Flight 11 is a hijack. Official timeline shows other ATCs are not notified for 5 minutes. That didn't happen 67 times in the calendar year prior to 9/11. Why were they not notified? At 8:20, Flight 77 departs Dulles Airport in Virginia. At 8:24, the pilot of Flight 11 activates the talk button. Boston Air Traffic Control overhears hijackers. The transponder has been off now for 10 minutes. 10 minutes since the point in time at which it was mandatory for the scramble order to have been issued. 8:25, Boston Air Traffic Control notifies other ATCs that flight is hijacking. They don't notify NORAD yet for another 13 minutes. Now, if I had the witness on the stand, and I will show you who the witness is before we're done tonight, the question would be, wait a minute, 67 times this happened in the year prior to 9/11. Now, you're telling me on 9/11 you have a confirmed hijacking, the first in recent history, and yet you waited 13 minutes after you knew, but then you already knew back at 8:14 that it was a hijack. Why did you not, for this 11 minutes here, notify anybody that anything was going on? If we come down to 8:28, Boston Air Traffic Control sees Flight 11 make a 100-degree turn to the south. Air traffic controls confirm they never lost sight of Flight 11. They never lost sight of Flight 11. The government has said, gee, when we lost the transponder, we couldn't pick them out of all the other airplanes in the sky. That is not true. We have complete conflicting testimony from FAA people and from pilots showing not only does that highlight the aircraft on every screen in every region, but we know that radar separate as a skin paint capability capable of determining altitude. So there, nobody ever lost track of anything at any time on 9/11. Boston ATC sees Flight 11 make a 100-degree turn to the south. ATCs confirm they never lost sight of Flight 11. Press accounts confirm that Flight 11's radar dot has been tagged for easy visibility. That means it was on every screen in the region, even that the plane was being watched by American Airlines headquarters, believe it or not. Now, we know that we have a confirmed hijacking in progress. Flight 11 has been hijacked. It's off course. It's lost control. It's a national emergency. And what is President Bush doing? President Bush's motorcade leaves his Florida hotel for the Emma Booker Elementary School 9 miles away. The journey takes an incredible 25 minutes to go 9 miles. As Bush is leaving, he is asked by a reporter, quote, do you know what's going on in New York? Bush says he does. Source, 13, maybe good for Bush. ABC News, September 11th, 2001. 8:37, Sector Air Traffic Control asks pilot of Flight 175 to look for a lost plane. Huh? The plane is not lost. Pilot of 175 says they can see Flight 11 and are told to keep away. 8:40, Boston Air Traffic Control notifies NORAD of Flight 11 hijacking. Wait a minute, it's been 26 minutes now. We're talking about this line right here, 26 minutes. Since we knew that it was a hijacking, since NORAD, according to their own procedural manual, would have known it was a hijacking, and yet we have a 26-minute delay before the air traffic control notifies NORAD, which is where the one guy who pulls the trigger for scramble is sitting. Why did that happen? Good question. Somebody needs to ask it. We come right down to 8:40. Two pilots at Otis Air Force Base at Cape Cod are told of the hijack, yet no scramble order is given. What? It happened 67 times in the year prior. Source for that, number 16, is the Cape Cod Times, August 21st. They went right out to the airbase. 8:42, Flight 93 takes off from Newark after a 40-minute delay. That's kind of interesting. That's right here. 8:42, Flight 175 veers off course, according to the FAA manual. If you have any doubt, you shall assume and proceed as if it was an emergency. 8:42, an air traffic control says, looks like he's heading southbound, but there's no transponder, no nothing. Now from another press report, which is from the New York Times on October 16th, we have a plane off course and no transponder. Now, under FAA rules and procedures, it is axiomatically an emergency and a hijacking. A second set of scramble orders should be given, so we know that the Flight 175 hijacking is confirmed at 8:42. At 8:43, NORAD is notified of the 175 hijack. 8:43, gee, that's just like a minute later. Now, why did they wait so long for one, do the second one immediately? But listen to this. Over here on the right, it says, at 8:46, scramble orders are issued at Otis Air Force Base to go after Flight 11, 190 miles away. Fighters from closer bases like Atlantic City are not scrambled. 8:46 a.m., Flight 11 impacts World Trade Center. 8:46, Acting Joint Chiefs Chairman Richard Myers claims that he sees a TV report about the plane hitting. Now, didn't we just hear in the FAA procedural manual that the FAA hijack coordinator is to do this with the National Military Command Center, which is in the Pentagon, which reports directly to the Joint Chiefs? And General Richard Myers claims he did not know the two airplanes had been hijacked at 8:46 in the morning. The procedural manual says he certainly knew. 8:46, Flight 175 stops emitting a transponder signal 50 miles north of New York City. Other reports state that 175 had turned off its transponder, then back on again and on an unassigned frequency. There is no doubt now that we have an emergency under any circumstances. Over here at 8:46, three F-16s assigned to Andrew Air Force Base are flying air-to-ground strike training mission 200 miles from Washington. Instead of being ordered to D.C. at supersonic speeds, they return to base, slowly landing only after Flight 77 hits the Pentagon. They could have been in D.C. airspace within 10 minutes. 8:46, Flight 77 is reported by ATCs to be severely off course. Three scrambles. After 8:46, National Military Command Center's officials in the eastern part of the Pentagon are talking to law enforcement officials about possible responses. What? The responses are already dictated for them in their manuals. You shall scramble fighters immediately. Now we have a report saying they were debating whether to, there was no leeway. They're debating when it's before them in black and white what it was they were supposed to do. That is, at best, a civil negligence suit of the utmost extreme. Of course, we believe it's criminal, and I agree that the RICO suit should put all those people in jail once we find out who they are, and we'll get there. Okay, so they're talking about what to do next at 8:46. After 8:46, the FAA has an open line to the Secret Service. They can't manage to follow their own procedures, but they're talking directly to the Secret Service in the White House. It's confirmed by Vice President Cheney. I'll just tell you the source on that real quick, because already I see I'm running out of time. That was NBC News right after the attacks. After 8:46, the NORAD and National Military Command Center have opened phone lines. 8:46 to 9, Navy Captain Deborah Lauer in the Bush motorcade receives a message from the White House Situation Room about the first impact. This is before Bush even walks into. But notice that we already have three confirmed hijackings. Yet he decided to go into the room to read to the kids. Why? Probably so he could give a plausibly acceptable denial as to why he couldn't issue the order to shoot the planes down. Because he knew that they had to have the attacks. Bush later stated, that he saw the video of the attacks and said, oh boy, that's a terrible pilot. Well, of course, the video wasn't played for hours of the first crash.
Well, Jordan, you're not going to believe what state I was in when I heard about the terrorist attack. I was in Florida. And my chief of staff, Andy Card, I was in a classroom talking about a reading program that works. And I was sitting outside the classroom waiting to go in, and I saw an airplane hit the tower the TV was obviously on, and I used to fly myself, and I said, well, there's one terrible pilot. And I said, it must have been a horrible accident. But I was whisked off there. I didn't have much time to think about it. I was sitting in the classroom, and Andy Card, my chief of staff, was sitting over here, walked in and said, a second plane has hit the tower. America's under attack.
8:46, Barbara Olson, wife of U.S. Solicitor General, calls her husband at Justice Department. He calls the Justice Department Command Center and advises of a hijacking. Now, wait a minute. We got the Solicitor General getting a cell phone call, calling the Justice Department, saying there's a hijacking, and yet FAA has not issued scramble orders for all three flights. Somebody needs to go to jail. 8:46. First TV and news reports of the plane crashing into the World Trade Center. This is the latest time that Bush over here could have known, been asked by events by a reporter at his hotel when he indicated that he already knew. 8:50, last radio contact with Flight 77. Pilot asks for clearance to a higher altitude, then does not respond to a routine instruction. Otis Air National Guard, pilots take off 12 minutes after receiving notification. That's nonsense. Flying their F-15s at top speed, 1,875 miles an hour with a supersonic cruise speed of 1,600 miles an hour. If you do the math on the ones that went to the Pentagon, they had to have been flying at 300 miles an hour on this rush national emergency. 8:55, Flight 77 turns around. More confirmation. I mean, there's no doubt what's going on, but watch these delays that come down here when NORAD and the FAA did not do what it was they were supposed to do. I go through a lot of stuff, which we apparently will not have time to do tonight. I'm sorry. A news photographer traveling with Bush entourage overhears a radio transmission that Press Secretary Ari Fleischer would be needed on arrival to discuss reports of the crash. That's before 8:58. Latest confirmed arrival of Bush at the Booker Elementary School, 41. We got three confirmed hijackings in place, and he knows about it. And he has not lifted a finger to get anything up in the air. He has not mobilized the military. No executive orders have been issued from the White House, not from Dick Cheney, not from the National Command Authority. Bush is taken to a holding room and briefed by Condi Rice. Boy, there's a woman we can really distrust. Taken to a holding room and briefed, yet he decided to go ahead and read. 901, the pilots of Flight 93 acknowledge a general FAA warning. Now the FAA is issuing warnings about cockpit intrusion. Duh. Request to barricade doors. Pilots are not told of the WTC crash. Now I'm using a lot of stuff from the NORAD and FAA timelines, actually. At this time, Bush cannot be approached because he's in the discussions. Flight 17 hits Tower 2 of World Trade Center. This has all happened before the second plane hits the World Trade Center. Now, I'm using the government records, ABC News, mainstream news, NORAD, FAA timelines. All you got to do is lay this out and look at it. By 9:05, West Virginia ATCs notice an eastbound plane with no transponder entering their airspace. It's Flight 77 right there. All ATC facilities nationwide are notified that the Flight 11 crash was probably a hijacking, yet the West Virginia ATCs do not notify NORAD that Flight 77 is off course for 18 minutes. Why not? FAA informs NORAD at 9:16 that Flight 93 may have been hijacked. Duh. Look at this. By the book, all fighter aircraft should have been scrambled by this time, and we still have delay after delay after delay. One Air Force pilot at 9:24, codenamed Honey, who piloted an F-16 from Langley, disputes the official version. He says that the call to battle stations was not sounded until 9:24. In other words, even some of the pilots were disagreeing because they can't keep their cover up straight. From 9:27 through 9:30, Bush talks to Cheney at the White House, but there is no discussion of shooting down Flight 77 or Flight 93. Why? Bush finally leaves Booker at 9:29, and at 9:30, transponder contact on Flight 93 is lost. We come to the next page, 9:32, Flight 77 does that wonderful, what Kristen Breitweiser said, the loop-de-loop over the Pentagon. I love that terminology when she testified. God bless her. And amazing how you learn how to do that with four or five flight lessons. Dives into the side of the Pentagon, which is under construction. At the same time, the Flight 93 hijacking is confirmed. Now, I won't have time to go through all of this, but I will tell you, and I spoke to Phil Berg today, and he and I are both in complete agreement that Flight 93 was shot down. You cannot have a 5-mile or 4 or 5-mile debris trail. I think the port engine was something like 2.5 miles from the impact site. These multi-ton engines don't bounce 2.5 miles. Multiple witnesses confirm a missile strike on the aircraft, and there were some very strange military planes around that. So when you get to the bottom of all this, nobody did what they were supposed to be doing, and it shows very clear criminally negligent at best behavior. I think you have a clear case for conspiracy here. Now, as I look through this, the key point that Nafiz brought up was that there was one guy who pulls the trigger for fighter scrambles. That's him, Ben Sliney, or Slinney. His first day on the job, September 11th. Even I would have been smart enough to know that Ben Slenny is the first guy you got to talk to about what happened with the fighters. Have we heard a word from Ben Slenny anywhere? Has he been called to testify before the Independent 9/11 Commission? No, he has testified before a closed hearing, a session of the Joint House Senate Intelligence Committee. The families, God bless them, of the 9/11 Steering Committee have asked a whole list of questions. But clearly, from the position which we come here in this 25 minutes, and I haven't done the perfect job of this, but I would ask, if I was a detective coming to you with this evidence of a crime having been committed in juxtaposition with the behavior versus the procedural obligations, did I make my case? I would submit to you that if I could make this case to you in 20 minutes, we can make the same case to the American people in 20 minutes, and if we keep it simple, we might be able to crack the nut that we need to crack, that we must crack, to save our country, to save our planet, and our civilization. Thank you very much.
That was Michael Rupert. He blew the whistle on CIA drug smuggling into Los Angeles and was forced to resign from his job in the L.A. Police Department. And thanks to the filmmakers of the new movie on 9/11, Liberty Bound, and Blue Moose Film, for the clips of George Bush and the air traffic control calling Flight 93. In TUC Radio's next program, you will hear from the British author Nafis Ahmed. He wrote The War on Freedom, How and Why America Was Attacked on September 11. You can find more information on the failure to intercept on TUC Radio's website, www.tucradio.org. That's tucradio.org. Look under newest programs. You can get information how to order a copy of the complete one-hour tape or CD of this program by calling us. I hope you have a pen handy to take down a phone number. TUC Radio is listener-supported and free to all radio stations. Your tape order helps us stay on the air. Call us toll-free anytime at 877-TUC-TAPE for information on how to order. You can get your tape by mail or credit card, by phone, or on the web. Our toll-free phone number, 877-TUC-TAPE, translates into 877-882-8273. My name is Maria Gelarden. Thank you for listening. Give us a call.